A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. Man, it is a hot day. We are powered by the OBBM network. I'm just still getting into my Texas mode from New Mexico, so give me a little leeway here. Man, it's hot out there. I just want to reiterate, hydrate, take care of those puppies, and watch your elderlies out there, man. If they're feeling the heat, if you're feeling the heat, they're feeling the heat. So just be careful. It's going to be a dangerous week this week. So please just be careful and make sure you stay mentally healthy and take care of yourself physically wise. So how you doing, yeah, Sam?
I'm doing great. And that goes for all of our first responders, whether you're having to don turnout gear for fires or you're in your vest all day. Same thing goes for you, because I think it's got to be almost a decade since we've seen heat that's creating heat indexes this high. You actually traveled way further west, just got back from an incredible trip. And while it was awesome to see the things that you shared before we came live, some really frustrating things that hopefully we can shed some light on and change.
Yeah, it wasn't as hot as you think, because the elevation, we were up.
It was a dry heat.
It was a dry heat. It was almost, you know, you're in New Mexico, the elevation is almost 8,000 feet, so it was a little cooler. It wasn't really. It was comfortable. It wasn't crazy. But we went to Window Rock. We spent. We were invited to the Navajo Nation to stay on the reservation and learn about the police department out there on mental health, and talk to many of the people about, you know, the missing and the indigent women and a lot of the stuff that the Navajo Nation does not have, like our United States has, and you know. We were really shocked to learn they just got the Amber Alert system this year. Now, our Amber Alert system's been probably in the United States for over 20 years. They had just put it online this year. So that shows how far behind they are. And speaking with some of the first responders within the Navajo Nation is that their resources, you know, when we turn around and we say, you know, we are limited on some of our resources. You know, we got to fight insurance companies. We got to fight this. We got to fight that. They have close to zero resources when it comes to mental health. I spoke to one of the police chiefs who said he goes to all the seminars. He goes to all those conferences and stuff, but nothing is brought back. And I think that's where it lies the problem. You know, they're not bringing anything back, or they don't have the people experienced enough to bring it forward.
So like facilitation wise.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, one, the education system is subpar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot, you know, the manpower in the Navajo Nation, because the reservation is about the size of West Virginia total, and they probably have maybe 60, 70 sworn officers. So that's not a lot when you break it down into three shifts, you know, and then you start talking about, you know, you have to travel 200 miles for a call.
Right.
You know that, I mean, it's tough. So their resources are limited. I walked into when we walked into Gallup Police Department, which is right just right outside the reservation in there in New Mexico as well, you know, we got to speak to the police chief. And when we walked into the detective unit, I saw probably had to be 100 names, 150 names of missings on the board dating all the way back to 1986, you know. And I said, you know, what's the progress on these? And then she's like, you know, we try. We can do our, we can only do what we can do. We're limited on manpower. They only have 48 sworn officers. So if you're looking for a job in Gallup Police Department, there's a plug, man.
There you go. There you go. If they're hiring. So yeah, when you talk about limited resources and may not be able to do the things that bigger departments are doing, you know, I had a chance to talk with our guest this evening earlier in the day, and we were talking about how important it is to talk to and highlight as many resources as possible, because you may not be able to send a first responder to a class, but in some cases you can bring the class to them or a podcast to them. And all it takes is like smartphone, and
right,
you gotta use the technology that we have. And tonight we have two incredible people with us, Daniel and Christina Deffenbaugh. They have a podcast as well. We'll get into that. But what they're doing to literally save the lives of our first responders out there is amazing. I'm going to bring them on right now, and we're just going to dive right into it. From the 1042 Project, welcome, Daniel and Christina.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you. Sorry for the audio issues. Hope you guys can hear us okay. We're in our studio, but none of our equipment wants to work today.
Like I said, I think it's the heat. It's just like this straight line that is crazy. And sometimes, you know, we just got to roll with it. But we can hear you just fine. Yep. Thank you for rolling with those punches and getting on here right on time. Really appreciate it. Let's jump in, because Daniel, you and I spoke before the podcast today, and this is just going to be so dynamic because of your background and your story, and then Christina, how you came along and went, something's off here. So, Daniel, we'll start with you. You know, tell everybody listening and watching about your background.
Yeah, thank you for having us on. And my name is Daniel Deffenbaugh. I was a police officer here in the state of Iowa. I work for a town called Indianola, which is a small town of like 17, 18,000 people. It's not huge. I started my career right out of college when I was 20 years old. I walked in to my first day on the job, and I thought I was going to be equipped and ready for the job. And I soon learned after starting my career in law enforcement that this stuff's real, you know, and you don't realize how real it is until you're actually there. And I was very young in my career, out on my own for the first time, when I got a call of what was called in as a deer in the road outside of town, and it was raining and thundering. So I went out there to back up the deputies, and I got there before they did, and going to just a deer in the road, which is pretty common in Iowa. And there was a 17, 18 year old kid who had been struck by a car, hit and run, and mangled and left to die. And I'm standing out on this road outside of town at that time, I just turned 21. And I'm realizing as I'm looking down, my world's never going to be the same. Like, this stuff is real. And I know we think it's real when we sign up for the job, but until you go there and you see it, and you're out there on a rain, dark night with lightning going off, and here's this dead body that you now have to deal with. And that was the first call of my young career where I remembered it changed me. And when I got off a shift that day, it was the first time I drove to the gas station to get alcohol, to get that thought out of my mind. It started as a very young officer. And I grew up in a family with that was alcoholics as well. And alcohol was a thing in our life. And as you guys know, pain loves simple pleasures. And I was feeling hurt. And I did what I thought I knew what to do at the time, which was run to alcohol. So as a young officer, I quickly unknowingly trained myself that in times of complete distress and the overwhelming feeling that happens as a first responder when we see trauma, for me, it was run to alcohol. Let's numb this. Let's pass out as soon as you can so I don't have to worry about this anymore. And my career continued on. I was in it for 14 years. And around 2005, I had a really bad call of a friend of mine who was a firefighter here in Iowa. And he had volunteered to work on the fire department for a young guy who just got hired. He volunteered to work for him on Christmas Day. And when I was working patrol that day, my sergeant and I got a phone call from dispatch, and they told us that Dan, who we know as Dan Nichols, had rolled his vehicle outside of Indianola and was trapped underneath it. And my sergeant and I went there, and I looked down and saw a friend of mine who was just a staple of the community, outstanding guy, laying there dead. The fire chief asked me if I would go with him to the house to tell his wife, Jana, and the kids. So I did, and we arrived on the scene and knocked on the door, and Jana knew right away. And those kids were sitting around the Christmas tree waiting for Dan to come home, and we had to let them know that that wasn't going to happen. And that day in December 26th of 2005, I took a turn for the worst. I just started drinking more and more and more. I started having what I call them, the old 8mm film. Every dead body you've ever seen, it's just like a flash in front of your face, a quick image, and then just one after another. And I just started coping it with alcohol and more alcohol and more dangerous living. And I was, by 2005, I'm married. I have three kids. And my career continues. And by 2010, I'm in a huge, deep decline. I come out, I was working undercover narcotics for a 5-county area here, including Des Moines, working on a drug task force. And I came out of that and went back to patrol, and things just continued to get worse. And by 2014, I had already started to attempt suicides, planning my death. I'd quit wearing my bulletproof vest to work, my bullet resistant vest to work. I wanted to die in the line of duty. I didn't pull my gun. I would just drive around and go to places where I've covered fatalities and get the courage to try to wreck my car and die in the line of duty. For some reason, in my sick mind, I thought it would be more courageous to die in the line of duty. I know now how sick that is. And so by 2014, I'm in and out of the hospital routinely about every month or so. I have to pull my patrol car over, call for an ambulance because I'd get real bad tunnel vision. Heart would start pounding. I felt like I was having a heart attack, so the ambulance would come get me and drive me to the hospital, and this continued. So finally, the chief came to me and said, hey, I think it's time. Maybe you need to apply for medical disability through your retirement board. And I didn't want to do it, but I knew I had to because I was becoming a danger to myself and to the fellow officers and to the community. So I did that. I laid down my badge and I turned in my paperwork for retirement, and I thought my life was going to get better. And that was just the beginning of the downfall, because as you guys may know from talking with people and being first responders yourself, I thought my identity was in that badge I was wearing. I truly thought I was sent here on earth to be a police officer, and that was my calling. So when I lost my badge, I lost my hope. I lost what I thought was my purpose. So even though I had a family of three, I had asked my wife for a divorce in 2014. So I went through a divorce. Our home was foreclosed on. I was in huge money trouble. Luckily that's over, but we were in huge money trouble because I was trying to use money to numb my pain as well, which a lot of first responders do. And a lot of vets do. We buy these big campers and trucks and toys to help us enjoy life, because we're suffering so much at work and at home. We try to buy these things, but sometimes we don't realize how much of a cost comes with that. And then with that is the cost of this stuff. Therefore, you're working more overtime, and you're exposed to more pain. And this is a vicious circle that first responders a lot of times get into, is this: we have this hurt, we don't know what to do with it. So we start looking for spending money, or it could be sex, or it could be drugs, or it could be alcohol. And we start using those to try to help our mental health, which is obviously the wrong way. So from 2014 to 2020, I was homeless at times. I was bouncing around from job to job, just trying to find a purpose in life. And in June of 2000, we were engaged.
You mean 2020?
I'm sorry, June of, I always say that, June of 2020. We were engaged, and I hadn't really told her anything about it. And my wife has a degree in psychology, and we were at a family thing on my birthday, and we got home that day, and I went into a panic attack. It was the first time she ever got to see it. I was flopping like a fish on the bed. She had to call 911. So I had to go to the hospital. So I was kind of, I had to say something then because she knew, and the doctors there voiced it, what was going on with me. So it was the first time she got to hear it, but it wasn't a surprise.
Well, wow. We are talking to Daniel and soon Christina Deffenbaugh from the 1042 Project. You're listening to a Badge of Honor podcast on the OBBM Network. We got to take our first break. We will be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely, America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. And welcome Danielle and Kristen with the 10, Christina with the 1042 Project. You know, before we left, Daniel was telling us about what so many officers go through throughout their career. And, you know, you brought up, Daniel, about the purchasing of things. You know, shopping, no matter what the purchase is a dopamine rush. It's just an adrenaline rush for you. So it gives you that high for that feel good moment to get out of that stress factor, but it doesn't last. And we could just keep toppling and toppling, and we keep chasing that high, be it shopping, drugs, sex, whatever it is. You keep chasing that high, and it's not until you fall down the rabbit hole that you realize, man, I've been doing stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And Christina, you're okay. So you see, he's in a full on panic attack. You guys go to the hospital. He's basically got to come clean with everything that he's experienced to why he's having this episode here. And you guys are newly married, right?
We hadn't quite gotten married yet at this
point. Oh, so we're not even married. So, okay, what is going through your mind?
Hitting the road.
I actually, like Daniel said, I have a degree in psychology, and I'm just naturally a soft, comforting person. I like being with people in their toughest moments. Because I don't know, like that's my calling, I guess. I want to be with hurting people and I want to help them. And so I just was like, wow, just my heart went out to him because I knew more than he knew that I did at that point in time, because we'd had conversations and he'd shared what I call breadcrumbs of what was actually going on inside. And there were other things going on that I noticed, like, this is interesting. His, you know, hypervigilance, avoidance of certain places, how just day-to-day activities would bring up memories that he would bring up, and he wouldn't go into a lot of detail, but I would hear that, oh, this is on his mind in this place, and this is on his mind in this place. So I knew that there was more going on than he knew that I knew, and I think more than he really understood at the time, because I think struggling with something like PTSD from traumatic events can feel bigger than a person really knows how to handle. And I brought it up to Daniel before, and I could really hear in his voice that it was something that he didn't really understand all the way and was scary to him. And I just wanted our relationship and me to be a safe space and a supportive space. So I tried not to push him and just make sure it was safe and comfortable. So when when that happened and we went to the hospital, then I realized, okay, now's probably the time to move a little more forward. You know, even if that's out of his comfort zone a little, let's talk to somebody, let's pursue something. And so that was where I was at with it. Like, I just wanted to make sure he felt really supportive and that we addressed it and didn't just leave him where he was.
You know, you said so much in the way you described it, because a lot of first responders that we talk to, when we talk about communication, the first thing they say is, why would I want to tell my significant other about a crime scene? And what we try to explain to them is, you're giving them the breadcrumbs, if you will. You're giving them bits and pieces, not the gory details of it. And I'll say, Daniel, super blessed that Christina came into your life, that she was able to put these breadcrumbs together in this puzzle that she had already decided, hey, she knew what was pretty much going on with you. She created the safe space for you to do you and kind of unveil what was going on with you when you wanted to. And how many times, John, have we heard in family workshops and just from spouses in general, it's like, you know, they're shaking their spouse with, why won't you talk to me?
But, you know, seeing what Christina did, she developed that safe space mm-hmm. because she had the education and the knowledge behind her. And that's right. Why it's so important for family members to be involved with post-traumatic stress, that they learn to find the breadcrumbs and they know the words not to use to trigger, and they create that same safe space in the home, because many relationships fail because the first responder doesn't feel supportive, or he feels maybe neglected, or you don't understand me. So a lot of relationships could be saved if just proper education into what post-traumatic stress does to the human body.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it takes a full family approach. You know, that's why with our organization, we want the whole family involved, because
yep.
Honestly, if it's untreated, everybody's going to suffer together, or everybody can do well together. You know, a high tide rises all boats. And a lot of times the first responder is the one also leading the family. And it is definitely a family.
It does affect the family completely. And we're going to get into what your 1042 project does specifically. We got to take our next break. We will be right back.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. We have Daniel and Christina with the 1042 Project. And if you're just joining us now, Daniel gave us a little background of his 14 years in law enforcement. And Christina's telling us about her degree in psychology and how that helps her to build a safe zone for their relationship. So welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
So what? First, let's start with the name. Where'd you come up with the name?
So the day I came up with the name, it wasn't even my idea. So when in August of 2020, after the whole hospital incident, my wife and my mom asked me to go to another counselor because I hadn't gone for years. So I tried a new one and it didn't go well. Mm-hmm. And the next day is where I decided I was going to end my life. I was working out in a sales job at the time, and after that counseling session, we were engaged. So the thought of bringing a new family into my mess just sounded like a dead end road. So when I left that counseling appointment, I went down to work that day. And when I was driving to where I was going to end my life, it was about a 30-minute drive. This was the first time in my life I ever in my life felt God or felt the Holy Spirit. I didn't really believe in God or kind of ran from God my whole life. To me, I'd seen so many things in my career at how could any of this happen? And that was the first day when I was on my, I was literally a mile away from where I was going to end it. I felt God just coming to the car and just asking me to turn left, which is where Lake Okwahbee is, a lake that's right next to us. And I just felt like I had to. So I went there and I fell on the ground and I asked God, like, what do you want? I'm going to be seeing you here in just a couple of minutes. If you're real, we're going to meet. Why do you want me here? And I just, and this is the first time, I know this sounds crazy, guys, but this is the first time I ever had a vision. And if you would have told me, you guys would have told me you had a vision before, I would have said you were crazy, but this is how it was. I get there and I get out of my car and I'm bawling and I see, I have an image, a vision of a police officer sitting in his bathtub with an empty bathtub with his service weapons and his vodka bottle and his pill bottle, because I also developed a bad addiction to hydrocodone after I got out of law enforcement. Boy, those, yeah, that was a whole nother train wreck. So I saw in this vision, I saw a police officer sitting in his life. And I think it's me in the vision. In the vision, I put my hand on the shoulder. And when the first responder turns, it's not me. And that was the first time I've ever heard God's voice, not audibly, just run through my body saying, I want you to start an organization to help first responders that are this close to taking their life like you are. And to let them know that there's a community that loves them, that cares for them, and that their purpose is not their badge. There is a bigger purpose for them in this world. And at the time, I'm thinking, I can't help anybody. I'm here to end my life. And it was then when I heard this, the name, the 1042 Project. And at first I was like, what does that even mean? I knew what it meant because it's a 10 code we use. But I'm thinking, why would we use that for our name? But really, when we're on work, so in the area I work, 1041 is a code. We go on duty, we say 1041. And when you go off duty, we say 1042. And when you're working throughout your day, you have all the resources in the world. It's when you take that uniform off, when you get home, when you go 1042, that's when everything hits. That's the time we have to help our first responders, that 1042 time. And so that's what we really focused on, is we really wanted to do that. So that's why we called it 1042. And that's how it started, was at that lake.
So you came home and you told Christina what had just happened, correct?
Right.
And did you just say, so we're supposed to start this project called 1042 because God told me to, and let's do this. And Christina, you replied.
Again, it's going to sound crazy, but all I can say is what happened when I was not completely surprised, actually, when we left the counseling appointment. Again, same as Daniel, this had never happened to me and it felt really out of place. So I hadn't told him, but I'd also experienced what I can best describe as a vision when I literally closed the door. I remember the moment that I saw this, and I saw Daniel on a stage talking to people. And then I saw him off to the side working with people, like in small groups and individually. And like, I could vividly describe it to you. And I just didn't understand that. And I was like, wow, that's weird. I'm not going to say anything about that. Why would I bring this up right now? That's super weird. And I just didn't say anything. And then when he came home and told me all this, number one, absorbing everything that had just occurred, thanking the sweet Lord above that I still have, you know, Daniel, and then also piecing everything together, it was like, you know, that kind of makes sense. I feel like I better understand what I experienced, and things that were shown to each of us separately kind of really matched when we started discussing it and sharing it. So in a sense, it was kind of validating.
Wow, that is amazing. And what happened from there? Was there more therapy, more getting help? How did you navigate now that I'll say everything is out?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing I had to do was start being honest. I had to start being honest with not just her, but I had to start being honest with myself. And so a lot of that was starting to get me help and getting me to talk and me, you know, doing therapy. And that was a process. And really, the more I talked to her, the more comfortable she made me feel, the more she didn't make me feel broken. She just loved me for she just loved me for where I was at and just wanted to help me get to where I wanted to be. I just started getting treatment, and then we started talking, and we started traveling around the U.S. to different first responder conferences and kind of getting to know the community that's out there. And and kind of see how we were going to organize the nonprofit.
Right. We just worked to really put ourselves in the best position to serve the people that we feel called to serve very well. And we can only do that if we're in a good place ourselves. So, you know, we, both of us are actually in therapy just to make sure that we are in a good place. And the people that we speak to, you know, we hear a lot about their trauma too. And so we take our mental health very seriously, and we want to make sure that we're both in a healthy place at all times to best serve the first responders and their family members that come to us. And that also was a great opportunity for us to reflect on what Daniel experienced and ask the questions, what was missing for you? What did you need? What would have helped young Daniel when he saw his first traumatic scene? What did he need after that? Instead of, you know, a pack of beer, what would have been better? And really learn to put the pieces together of how we can show up for first responders where they're at, whether they're willing to talk about it yet or not, which is the purpose of our Shared Voices podcast. We know that there's a big first responder population that's not ready to talk about what they're struggling with. And we understand that that's real and that's heavy. And we want to meet you where you're at in that place too. So even if you're just willing to listen, then we want to have a positive message for you.
Well, there's power in healing from listening to podcasts and also connecting with the person or the people that you're interviewing to give them the ability to either come forward or the ability to say, oh, yeah, that I get that. That's happening to me, too. We are going to talk specifically about what 1042 Project can provide to first responders. But first, we got to take our next break. We will be right back.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. Before we left, we were talking about the 1042 project. And what I wanted to just talk to you real quick, Daniel, I wanted to just, and I don't want you to call out the police department or say anything, but this was 2015. So the way I look at things is your brain doesn't physically get developed till about 25, 26 years old. Here you're seeing your first dead body at the age of 20. Right. Then you have to make a death notification for somebody you knew. Right. So you have to do this death notification for a family. Was anything put in place back then to say, hey, or like to show that this is mentally hurting this officer? Is there, or just go back out to patrol? What, like?
Yeah, so after that incident, they had a debriefing at the fire department, and they invited myself and the sergeant over there. I don't remember what it was that day. We were working, and it wasn't really – it was just one of those things that was never really done back then. So, right. To be honestly, I was like, you know, I don't need that. I'm good. Because a lot of times you don't know you're not good until, you know, later on, because we're right. So good at masking our pain as well. So yeah, they did have a debriefing. I don't know, you know, how long it was or anything like that, but I just know it didn't even seem important to us at the time, so we didn't go.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's an issue with a lot of, when we do the critical incident debriefings, we end up stopping there for some reason. You know, we're like, oh, we had a big fire. We had a bad wreck. We had a bad shootout. And now we get everybody together in the room and everybody's machismo's up, you know, and we're talking.
Or everybody's about, like this.
Yeah, we still got that whole adrenaline high going and they expect us to release our feelings about it. And that's not how, you know, critical incidents work to tell everybody, hey, listen, here are some resources. In 30 days, you're going to start feeling this. In 90 days, you may start feeling this. Look at the sign, you know, the signs and symptoms. Are you drinking more, whatever? But they talk about the incident. They expect people to open up, and that's the wrong place for it.
Yeah, not a lot happens at those debriefing. We've been part of them with our organization, and yes, it's a good starting point. But there's it's so much more after that needs right. to be done.
Right.
Yeah, super follow up needed, and this is where you guys come in because. And Christina, you talked about the importance of going back and being like, well, when you had this trauma, you know, what was it that you wish you had? And then you're taking that and seeing how do we best manage this and put this into play in our nonprofit and our project so that if a first responder comes to us, we know this. We know exactly what needs to happen. You set the roadmap. And so, you know, if you have a first responder reach out to you, just kind of take us through what happens. Is it a conversation? Is it an email?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So usually when somebody reaches out, we start with whatever their comfort level is. We have had initial conversations just simply over the phone. We've also met somebody in person that wanted to discuss what they needed directly with us. That's part of our effort in meeting somebody where they're at, whatever their comfort level of communication is what we'll stick with. And then we just kind of get to know them and hear from them what they're feeling and what they're needing, what they're wanting, what desire they had in reaching out. And sometimes we have people come to us that know what resource they would like to move forward with. And at that point, we're addressing the barrier that is keeping them from the resource they would like to move forward with. At times, it's financial. So we cover that financial cost. Sometimes it's social and emotional. We have had many conversations with current and former first responders where they say, do you think PTSD is real? Do you think that I have that? And it's really a process of coming alongside of them and making sure that they feel supported through the process of getting help and accessing resources. And so we just really work with them with whatever barrier is in the way. Again, travel is another one. So we can arrange travel for them and make sure that they're able to have access to the resource they would like to move forward with. To give you a quick story of one way that we have really walked alongside a first responder, there was a nurse that was aware of our organization and what we do. And she gave our card to an individual that was in the hospital and being treated for suicidal ideations, really struggling with that. And that person reached out to us while they were still in the hospital. And Daniel was able to visit that person before they were even released and have a plan of action in place for what was going to happen once they were released, what they were needing, and the best way to get them moving forward in a way that they were comfortable with. I was also involved with that person's spouse, making sure there was support at home. And this first responder was able to be matched with an intensive inpatient treatment just for first responders struggling with PTSD. So that's another element that we're really focused on is making sure that we partner our first responders with resources that are relevant and helpful to them. So this person was able to go through treatment, not be mixed with general population or anything like that, and receive really focused treatment. And now they're back home with their family doing well. And we were able to also match them with a service dog at no cost to them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's what it takes to follow up, you know, and that's where a lot of places drop the ball.
Yeah. We're really building relationships. We're in continuing communication with the first responders and family members that reach out to us.
Yeah, we really, you know, we're best described as we really want to get into the trenches with people and not just point them towards something. In our organization, we're not there to to be their provider. We're there to just let them know they're not alone, that they don't have to walk this journey alone. Even if they don't even know what's going on with them, there's a community they can reach out and just talk to try to figure out what's going on. We don't obviously diagnose anybody. We don't do any of that kind of stuff. We're there to support them. If it's a money barrier, if it's maybe they're just afraid to go get help because they don't know what it looks like, we're there to bridge any gap and to fill that. And one of the other things we really do is when first responders go through this mental health crisis, a lot of them walk away from the things that they love the most, their hobbies, their sports and stuff like that. And we go into this deep isolation and we just stop doing anything that's positive because we have this what's the point mentality. And so a lot of our organization, when we help people with their mental health, we want to get them back into the things that excites them, things that feed them. So a lot of what we do is we do life-giving activities with first responders. We may take them, you know, maybe kayak fishing, or we may go kayaking, or maybe an art class. It may just be a one-on-one day with me at a pond fishing, or we may, you know, we team up with other like giving back outdoors for or elk hunting trips and different trips around the world to just get people engaged again and just feel joy and happiness. Because right. So many of us, we miss that as our mental health declines. We forget what joy and excitement feels like.
The off the couch mentality.
Yes.
But you guys bring a nice, unique development to people that are suffering, because as you're speaking to the person, like Daniel, as you're speaking to the first responder who's battling, you know, Christina, so many spouses need that support. So you guys bring that two-sided fold into this and a comfort level that's probably goes beyond just the one-on-one. You know, yeah. It's an all-encompass support network, which I like the dynamic that you guys provide.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so important. It's and I think that's the big thing that has changed. Because, you know, when John and I first started and way back when, and we talk about our experiences in getting well, you know, it was everything's focused around the person that needs the help and the families over here. Right. And now what we're seeing, and it's so important to bring the family to get that involved, because whether it's an inpatient or outpatient, the family member needs to know what's going on with their loved one, you know, how they may act after coming out of a therapy situation or a group or whatever the situation is, a positive way to respond, what's to be expected, you know, in the next coming days, weeks, months, how they can reach out and get support. And so, you know, thank you, because it's we still have a long way to go, but these are critical pieces, is that the family cannot be left to walk on eggshells to figure out how mom or dad is, you know, what kind of day they're going to have. That's not fair, and especially with the kiddos. And you're bringing in you're sharing voices, you're bringing in first responders into your studio to talk about what they've been through, and to let the first responder community and beyond the family members know nobody's alone in this. This has been going on for a long time. It's a lot of groups peeling back the layers of the onion. Talk about shared voices, why you wanted to go into that podcast aspect.
Yeah. So the big thing is a lot of first responders, and I'm sure you guys can relate, when you deal with your mental health, a lot of times you're doing things you're not proud of. So there's a lot of guilt and shame that can come along with trying to numb your pain, especially when you're doing it in unhealthy ways, like I was doing with alcohol and pain pills. And there's a lot of guilt and shame. So a lot of people, even though they know they need help, they don't want to reach out, because it's hard to talk to somebody about a pain pill addiction when you used to be a police officer, when you used to be a narcotics officer. It's hard to talk about alcoholism while you are a police officer. And there's guilt and shame. So with the 1042 Project, when people come on our podcast or they sit down with us, there's no guilt or shame. We understand that it's a messy life when you get in these situations. Marriages get bad. There's affairs that happen. There's drug addiction. There's porn addiction. And that's okay. We don't want you to stay there, but we just want to meet you where you are and let you know it's okay. There's no guilt or shame. You're not going to say anything that we probably haven't heard. And that's okay. We just want to meet you where you at. We'll meet you where you are at, and to help you get to where you want to be, and show you that there's a way out, and that there's a place where you can talk to two people who understand, and we get it, and we are for you, and we don't care. I don't care if you just got hired or you just got fired. We care about the person, not the badge.
Yeah,
that's right. Well said. Well said.
Yeah, another huge benefit that we are aiming at with the Shared Voices podcast is one of the best things I love about what we do is something that I got to see in Daniel for the very first time, because he was isolated for so long and wasn't comfortable sharing his pain and his story. I got to see the first time that he shared his story with another first responder who had felt the same exact thing. Their stories were so similar. And the look on his face, the light in his eyes, when he realized, wow, somebody just inherently gets the deepest struggle of my life. Yes. And it was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And that's what we want to give to people, especially with, you know, the podcast, for them to just even hear that somebody has walked your walk and they get it and you're really not alone.
Yeah,
absolutely. And where's the best place? Sorry, John, go ahead.
No, I would say so many officers and so many first responders feel like they're the only ones. So yeah, when you're able to share that, it is some of those weights off the shoulders going, wow, you know, whew.
Yeah.
I'm not broken. I'm not broken. There's another person out here. Like,
yeah, John. And John, one of the big things I've noticed is that it's not what a lot of times we feel so like we are the only one. But when you start talking to other people, you realize we are actually more common than we are different when it comes to what we're going through. And this shame and guilt and isolation and all this stuff we all struggle with, and it's okay to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, we got to take our last quick break, and we're going to talk about how people can find y'all, the podcast and everything. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these super quick messages.
To the Health Engineer Show, I'm Kurt Buechle, the health engineer, right here on the Offbeat.
Hi, I'm Larry Cortez.
Hi, my name is Susan Hamilton, and you're watching Offbeat. Hi, this is Doreen Milano. Welcome to Big Ideas.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. We have Daniel and Christina with the 1042 Project. Thank you, guys. Man, it's been powerful so far, and I hope everybody that is in the listening area and just paying attention, remember, you're not alone. You're still in Iowa, right?
Correct.
All right, you guys are in Iowa. You know, Sam, we're in Texas, but you were from, Virginia. I was from New York. You know, different states, everything's bonding together. There are people that are battling in every single state in a similar way. So, you know, we all come from different backgrounds, different networks, different experiences, but it all ties into the one thing, and it's getting mentally healthy together. So I want to thank you guys once again for the 1042 Project to bring this forth.
Yeah, you've got your website on the screen, 1042project.org. And so how can people, what's the best way to find the podcast and listen to it?
So the best way, honestly, is going to our website. We've got little icons at the top of our website that will take you directly to the major podcast platforms. We can also be found on YouTube. If you just search 1042 Project or Shared Voices, then those podcast episodes will pop up for you.
It's so great when you can just type it in and boop, there you are.
It comes up.
And then is it the same thing if a first responder is really looking to connect with you all? Same thing, go through the website?
Yep, I would recommend our website. Again, we do have a contact us button where we can be reached, but our contact information is on our website. So we've had people text us, email us, submit a message through the website, or even message us on Facebook. We will respond to all of those.
And then the one thing that I neglected to mention that's super important about what you all do is the confidentiality piece.
Yes.
Because the last thing, Daniel, I mean, you were your story, your stuff was kind of out there. And I mean, credit to your chief for kind of steering you in a direction that it's like, hey, no shame here. This is a disability. Let's get you taken care of. We all know that that is not the norm. Most of the time, it does not happen like that. So confidentiality, you guys say that a bunch of times on your website.
Yes, it's all about confidentiality.
Yes, yep. And privacy. We want first responders and their family members to truly feel safe here. And so we will respect their privacy to the utmost. And we do not report, because I know some organizations do that, certain avenues that first responders go through, it does get reported to their department. We are not one of those. And anything they say and any treatment they seek will remain confidential and private.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we can't thank you guys enough. I mean, time always flies. Daniel, like I said, you and I talked before the podcast. We knew this was going to happen. The most important thing, if you are listening and you know deep down inside, I mean, your brain's screaming at you, reach out 1042project.org and talk to Daniel and Christina. They are there for you. They'll get you set up with what you need. And remember, your family is not left behind either. Thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast. We wish you all the best. Keep sharing those voices, because the podcast is super powerful and we can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
You bet. We will be in touch.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Okay. I love what they do. And this is not the last that we'll be seeing of them for sure. Really appreciate Daniel just being open and putting everything, about his story out there so that people can connect. Cause that's how we realize that we need the help, that we're not alone. Right. It's in the connection of the stories. And, you know, for everybody that joins us each week, we want to thank you so much. Thank you for spreading the word about the podcast. If you like what you're hearing, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And we're all over the social media, whether it's our new stuff on Instagram, which is taken off. Thank you, Instagram followers. Love you out there. Keep commenting. Keep liking. We're on the Facebook. You can find
Facebook.
Us there.
We're on the Facebook.
We're on the Twitter, or do we call it the X now? I'm not sure. And on Twitter, that's the difference. You gotta type in a badge of honor and the number one, because some famous soccer guy has a badge of honor. Why? I don't know, but I can't reach him to like get our name. So on Twitter, you can find us at a badge of honor and number one. Hey, if you like Rumble, check us out on Rumble TV. Just go to rumble.com and type in a badge of honor. And gosh, if you notice, we have a new sponsor. Thank you, Rockwall CPR. That was a video that left you on a cliffhanger. You know, it's like you expected the runner to be the one having CPR done on him the first time.
I did.
So, yeah. So if you are a healthcare facility, because BLS is offered, if you're home health, whatever your CPR first aid needs, go ahead and contact Rockwall CPR at rockwallcpr.com is the easiest way there. We want to thank our partners at Carry the Load. You know, if you're a veteran or first responder or an active military and you are needing assistance, you can reach out to carrytheload.org. We're part of the Continuum of Care program, and you have access to all of Carry the Load's partners as well as ours. And we continue to expand that. And, you know, really to everybody out there that's a first responder, we are praying for you every day. You guys are walking around with a target on your back. Know that you have people out there that love you, that support you, that will back you up no matter what. So thank you for keeping us safe here on the home front. For all of our veterans, thank you for fighting the good fight. Thank you for fighting for freedom that allows me and John to do a show like this each week. To our active duty personnel across the globe, thank you for keeping our shores safe. John, take us home. Oh, John, I think you're muted. John's muted. Oh, you know what? While John's muted, we got two activities coming up. August 18th, NAMMYNorthTexas.org. They are having their first ops. Their Overwatch peer support is having their first major fundraiser. So go to NAMMYNorthTexas.org and register. We're putting together a team of four that a Badge of Honor is sponsoring. So if you want to be part of its shooting, they're doing clay shoot. If you want to be part of that team of four, on us, it's absolutely free. We're looking for a police officer, firefighter, EMS, dispatch. We're putting together the four.
One of each.
Investigator, whatever it is, contact us. How do you do that? A badgeofhonor.com. Super, super simple. And then August 25th, we're right back in the game up at Garland PD. Thank you, Garland PD. We have got our 8-hour T-Coal workshop where we got breakfast and lunch for you, and we're going to talk about kind of the stuff that Daniel and Christina talked about and go deep into our stories and let you know you're not alone and we got your backs. That's John, right. Take us home now. All that right, you're unmuted,
man. I'm unmuted now, but I want to thank the Navajo Nation Police Department and the Gallup Police Department for allowing me to visit with them today. We really are blessed here in the United States with the resources we have, because not each department has that. So we're going to reach out. We're going to try to get those guys mentally healthy as well. Everybody stay mentally healthy. And if you can be anything in this world, please be kind. Peace.
See you next week, everybody.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.